So at the beginning of the week, I issued a challenge to you. I said if you come to all 5 days of the Bible study, or if you came to Holden Village after Sunday, after Monday, if you came to Bible study every day that you were on the, I could say on the island, I'm doing a little giveaway of some books up here. So we'll just end a little early, and you can come, and you can take a book, or if we have more people than books, we can figure out a just way to distribute them. So they're just books from my office that were sitting on the shelf and were about to be given away, and I thought they were ones that would particularly appeal to the kind of people who I thought I might meet at Holden Village. But today, we are going to talk about Jesus. And it wasn't intentional that I left him mostly out of the conversation for the first 4 days of the Bible study. I just found as I was, thank you so much. I found as I was preparing to think about sort of the hiddenness of God, I started with Genesis, and there's so much in the Bible that kind of didn't go very far in the Bible. So I feel like we could do this for years and years for every book of the Bible. But of course, most of us, or some of us, or all of us, are Christians. So I wanted to talk about sort of, I feel like we've named a lot of problems now, and Jesus is not an easy answer to any of those problems, but I think as Christians we believe that if there are answers to be found, that we should consider the incarnation and ministry and death and resurrection of Christ, and also the form that Christ's ministry and body and presence has taken in the church since then. It's a lot to do in one day. So we'll just touch on a few themes from the life of Jesus, and we're using some children's music, and we'll have discussions again, and we'll just see how far we get. So, but I wanted to start out with this quote from Luther. Oh, and by the way, I should say, you probably picked it up on your way in. I've given you a handout with some of the quotes that I'm using in my PowerPoint. I think Holden Village can also make my PowerPoint maybe available online to you. But I just wanted to give you sort of my favorite quotes. So there you go. And this is on it. The Bondage of the Will is this document that Luther wrote. He was having an argument with a humanist, Erasmus, about how much free will do we have. And it's more complicated than that. But I love this quote from it, because Luther, as we said, I think on the third day, on Wednesday, Luther believed that faith was moving from this place of uncertainty, this place of terror, really, of fear, not knowing who God is, not knowing who we are, knowing that we cannot do what we wish we would do, knowing that we're sinful, we're broken, and knowing that we cannot just magically make everything better. Moving from that place toward a place where you still recognize all of that, but you also gaze at Christ. And you see God through a sort of loving lens by looking at the work that Christ did. So I like this quote because Luther's sort of talking about the hiddenness and the revelation. Luther says, God must therefore be left to himself in his own majesty. He's talking about the hidden, scary God, the God who could predestine some people not to go to heaven, the God who could, notice I'm saying could, we don't know these things, but the God who takes away everything from Job because he gets into a spat with the accuser, the God who, you know, tells Noah, I'm going to destroy the earth. So this God must therefore be left in his own majesty, for in this regard we have nothing to do with him, nor has he willed that we should have anything to do with him. But we have something to do with him, insofar as he is clothed and set forth in his word, through which he offers himself to us, and which is the beauty and glory with which the psalmist celebrates him as being clothed. And for Christians, a big part of that word is the life of Christ. So let's start with the birth of Christ. Does someone want to read this little section of scripture?
In the time of being here, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, where is the child who has been born, king of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising, and have come to pay him homage. They set out, and there, ahead of them, went the star that they had seen at its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy.
So I'm going to play this song for you. This is Butterfly Fish, which is one of the groups we heard the first couple days. And the song is about the wise man's journey. So just listen to it and think about who you might be in this story and what you might be seeking.
Every day I know the sun will rise. A beautiful world shining in your eyes. Every day, every day, every day, every day. Every day I know the sun will rise. But then one night, such a beautiful sight. Up in the sky, calling so clear, drawing us near, wondering why. That's why we follow that faraway light. And that's why we travel. Only at night. Everywhere we go, we travel on. We ride in the night and go to sleep at dawn. Everywhere, 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 everywhere. Everywhere we go, we travel. Deep in the night, you're such a beautiful sight. Up in the sky, calling so clear, drawing us near, wondering why. That's why we follow that faraway light. That's why we travel only at night.
To the PowerPoint, so if you go on the website later and find it, you'll have them. I love how this song is about traveling through the darkest places to see a glimmer of something that we think is there. We may not even know what it is, but we follow it. And we trust that at the end, the sun will come up. So I have a couple reflection questions here. Why don't you just take a minute to maybe think about it individually, jot down some answers in the box on your handout, and then share with the person next to you, and then we'll come back together as a group. So what are some of the stars God has put in place for us to follow? You can interpret that broadly. And then what might we see? I shouldn't say what do we see. What might we see when we get there?
For me, I think the stars God has put in place for us are the parables of Christ.
You guys hear up there?
No.
Just say it louder.
The parables of Christ in the New Testament and the overriding message of Christ of selflessness. Which is a goal that we should, I think, should all keep in mind, and I don't know if we ever get there. So I don't know what you see when you really get there. Maybe you work with Mother Teresa or something. But just keeping that as the star on the horizon to keep following is how I would translate the message.
That's helpful, and I like what you said about maybe we won't ever get there, because when you think about the using stars for navigation, that is so foreign to me. But because we have our iPhones and our GPS, but the stars way up in the sky, so how do you move, and you're not getting any closer in a sense. How do you know when you're there? Maybe it's all a quest to continue. Yeah.
I don't think we ever get to the true model is probably unachievable for almost all of us.
Thank you. I'm not quite sure how this relates, but some of the people that went on the Star Walk last night, we were talking at breakfast, and you need a dark sky, and the issue of pollution. For me, the things that stars that God has put in place are things that cut through all the pollutions that are surprises. I imagine the wise men being surprised by these stars and compelled to follow them because of their brightness. And so I think of surprising things like schools and refugee camps and goat projects that use very little and turn around whole villages of women. And those are kind of the stars that come out of the pollution that we can follow. We may not be able to do that kind of thing, but I'm glad that a light has shown up.
Yeah, thank you for that. I felt some of that at Vespers last night in the slideshow, where these images almost seem like little sparks of this is where people are doing concrete things. So that's helpful. Let's go on to another story from the life of Jesus. So he was born, and he grew up, and he did his ministry and his teaching. But I want us to look just for a minute from this story in John 8, where the people are about to stone the woman caught in adultery. So does anyone want to read this for us? Yeah, thank you.
The scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in adultery, and making her stand before all of them, they said to him, "Teacher, this woman has been caught in the very act of committing adultery. Now in the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. Now what do you say?" They said this to test him, so that they might have some charge to bring against him. Jesus bent down and wrote with his finger on the ground.
Don't you wish you could know what he wrote?
Yeah.
All to he write. Let's go on and read the rest of the story.
When they kept on questioning him, he straightened up and said to them, let anyone among you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her. And once again he bent down and wrote on the ground. When they heard it, they went away, one by one, beginning with the elders. And Jesus was left alone with the woman standing before him. Jesus straightened up and said to her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" She said, "No one, sir." And Jesus said, "Neither do I condemn you. Go your way, and from now on, do not sin again."
So, in a minute, I'm going to play you another Butterfly Fish song that retells this story. But a couple things, well, I'll just ask, what stands out to you in the story that maybe you hadn't noticed before?
He bent down and straightened up twice.
Yeah, did you guys hear that? Twice he bent down and then straightened up. Any other details that stand out?
Yeah, I just noticed that on the second time was when they, once again he bent down and wrote on the ground. And then it says when they heard it, they went away.
So did they?
He said he wrote.
Yeah,
that's interesting. So when he offers
a
third way.
And you thought the woman had committed adultery, I would have thought that she probably would have committed adultery with maybe a man.
Yeah, where's the man in the story? Yeah.
It's not a solitary act.
No, it's not. And I think at the time, even if the woman had been raped, it would have still counted against her as adultery. And so we don't know if her act was consensual or not.
It was one of the elders.
Yeah. Well, one thing I noticed in this reading, when you were reading it, and it said they went away one by one, beginning with the elders, someone kind of made a startled sound, and I thought, oh, beginning with the elders. That strand of it had never stood out in my mind before.
Oh, well, it's pretty obvious that if you ask a group of people, you know, well, who's sinned or who hasn't, the people that have lived their full life, they probably can remember more sins than the kid who didn't think they'd ever done anything wrong.
Yeah.
They're wiser.
So, one more comment.
For me, go from now on, do not sin again. That's an almost impossible command. Right. We're all sinners and we are going to sin again. So what happens when she can't maintain?
That's a really good question. The song that I'm about to play provides one interpretation of what happens. Now, these songwriters are being like Luther and Kierkegaard. They're filling in gaps with their own telling of the story. But I think as people of faith who've been given the scriptures, that's okay that we are actually called to tell the story in our own way. So listen to this song and then we can come back to this question of what, as you listen to the song, think about what is Jesus giving her? What is he doing for her? So the song is called Let It Go Down. There are a couple of kinds of stones in this song. There's the stones of judgment and punishment that the people who are about to stone her are holding. And then there's her own stones of her guilt, her sin. You can interpret it in different ways. We don't know if what she did was a sin. As Jess said, there may not have been consent. But that still reflects sinfulness in human nature. So I thought we could think for a few minutes together. Maybe we could just do this part as a sort of group discussion right away. What are some of the stones that God might be calling you to put down? And then how might you begin to think about putting those stones down?
Prejudgment, prejudice.
Resentment.
What was that?
Resentment.
Resentment. Mm-hmm.
Cynicism. Hopelessness.
The stone that tradition is always right.
Yeah. The stone that tradition is always right.
our inherent privilege and racism?
Cynicism.
Cynicism.
The thing I like about this song is that before you can put the stones down, you need to hold them in your hand and feel the weight and wisdom.
Yeah.
I love that image.
I guess fear would be one, too,
yeah.
Our theme.
Yeah.
In this highly polarized climate we're living in politically, I can certainly confess those with whom I disagree with strongly. And it's very easy to hold that stone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And feel it and get used to it. And demonize those people. And rather than think through that, through the love of God to them as well. I still think they're right, but that's who they are. And it helps me to reflect on myself too. And always keep the option open that maybe I'm wrong sometimes.
Yeah, so maybe the stone is a sort of lack of humility, maybe an arrogance, but an overconfidence.
Exactly.
That you're right and the other is wrong.
Holding the stone is comforting. It's almost a defense. You say, if I'm not ready to throw, and putting it down leaves you more vulnerable and more open.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah, you put it down and then you have an open hand.
You have an open hand, you have nothing, then
no defenses.
Well, if this bad thing happens, then you have to be more open.
Yeah, nothing to defend yourself.
Was it Henry Nouwen who said, only open hands can receive?
Yeah.
Only open hands can receive, Henry Nouwen.
It's really hard for me, though. What you said struck me exactly how I feel, is that I have this righteous indignation about what's going on in the country and how people are suffering because of policies. And so I want to throw that rock really hard at that red hat. I really do.
The big one.
And I know that's not the way to change anything, mm-hmm. or to hearts and minds, you know, but that's the hardest one for me, is figure out how do I, because I don't think I'm wrong. I do think they're wrong, you know, and so, and what they're doing is hurting people. And so how do I, that's where I get stuck.
I feel that as well in my life. And I think that can also be a way of deflecting. I'll just speak for myself. I've used my anger against people with respect to particular policies,
right,
that I think I'm on the right side of. Mm-hmm. I've used that then to deflect from my own sinfulness, because I'm not right about everything. And I'm still not only complicit in structures that harm people, but even as an individual, I harm people. And I make choices that harm people. So, yeah.
Just thinking, there are power dynamics here that are confusing in our time, though. And somebody says that we might feel righteous indignation when our government is putting kids in cages, ripping them away from families. Jesus, I think, in this text, feels righteous indignation. So he goes to stand with someone. He speaks and writes in the dirt. We don't know. So how are we called to that kind of speech, that dangerous? He was in the center of a circle of people surrounding him to stones, out of a sense of justice.
Yeah.
So there's two sets of kind of righteous indignation going on in here, and I think we're called to them.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
And maybe policies, the righteous indignation against the policies and standing in the circle is one thing, but individual people is something else. Yeah. And that's the place to put down the stone, is like to connect with other individuals.
Well, I want to connect to what you were saying about finding your own sinfulness. I think what he wrote was, forgive her the first time. And the second time, I think he wrote, forgive yourself. And the reason I say that is because the hardest thing to do true forgiveness, you always have to forgive yourself.
That's right.
And that's the hardest thing to do. And it isn't something that you can do out loud. you have to do it quietly. So that's why I think that's what he wrote.
Yeah, and what speaks to me so much about this song is the second half where he speaks to the woman and helps her put down her guilt. And it speaks to me because I'm a guilt-driven person. That's just who I am. But I think I need to hear the forgive yourself. But I also try to remember that I need to examine what it is that I do feel guilty about and what it is that I should feel guilty about. I had this experience recently where somebody called me out on my privilege in a way that was really painful and it was jarring. And I feel like that was the stone that I needed to look at and hold for a while, because that person's words came at me in a way that did not feel in any sense good. But I tried to just hold the stone for a while. And I tried to examine it, because I think that demanded weight and wisdom. But then the next step is not to get stuck in the guilt and to put it down. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think of the images after Ferguson, Missouri, for example, of young African-American angry people throwing stones out of their poverty, out of their injustice, out of their anger, and how, quick one judges that one way or the other. But I just don't think there's any clarity about that.
Yeah, there may be many reasons for throwing stones.
Just a really quick thing. In front of Wright, in the indignation too, but what he did about it was to stay with the oppressed and work with her and help her find a new life. And the same with kids and in cages. We don't give up on that. We just go with them and we do something.
Yeah. I was talking with Jason about his prayer on Sunday, rush us to the side of the children in the cages. Mm-hmm. And I said, that's hard for me to hear, not the children in cages part. I know about that, I've been bombarded with that. But the rush us to the side, because I literally wish I could be by their side, but I can't actually do that. So I was feeling some tension around that too. What can I do? But the other thing I wanted to come back to, I think you said that he was really putting himself in danger. He could have been killed. And someone over here said it, in the middle of that circle of people with stones. And I love this little tiny image in the song, how she had tears in her eyes. Because I think we kind of think of this, we might think of the story from her perspective, but we might also put ourselves in the place of the stone throwers. Or we might think, what was Jesus doing? How should we follow Jesus? But just that very human image, she thought she was going to die.
Yeah.
And she almost did. And Jesus saved her.
It's also true that she would have never been in the position if it hadn't been for Jesus. They were looking for a way to trap him. Yeah. They weren't it wasn't just your weekly stoning of a woman.
Yeah.
It was a trap for Jesus. And I think there's an interesting reflection on Jesus is doing good work and people are potentially getting hurt. And it doesn't mean he should stop doing the good work. I don't know, it's an interesting tension there, isn't it?
That is fascinating. That would be a great, the next time that I call to preach on this, that would be a great way to sort of go. Thank you, Katie.
You jumped out of me in the text, I don't know if that's where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
Just that phrase that he was alone with the woman. And you can play with that emotion, and you can play with the culture. The thing about Jesus being alone with women is kind of an interesting thought.
Yeah, did you guys hear that up in the balcony?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He said, well, there were other times in the Bible that he was too.
Yeah.
The woman by the well, for example.
Yeah. Well, thank you for thinking this through with me. Yeah, maybe one more comment.
Yeah, just as far as how we put those stones down, in one of the sin is like a stone in your hand was one of the sentences in the. And I always have to go back to the Romans chapter 12, verse 2. Which says, do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And I often think that renewing of your mind also means renewing of your heart. Mm-hmm. But, that's That's the way that God can help us put the stones down.
So how do we get, where do we find that renewal of mind and heart?
Here?
Where else do we find it when we leave the Holden Village, the other 51 weeks from now? Sunday morning.
Study of God's word and worship, fellowship.
Yeah. Relationships.
Well, really any kind of community or relationship that helps you think and feel things deeply.
Challenging.
That challenges you.
So let's go on to one more episode in the life of Jesus. And that's the resurrection. I love this Luke 24. I love all of the post-resurrection appearances. They all have something surprising, and I think we can just read them again and again and get things out of them. But this Luke 24 one is one of my favorites, so I included it. Who wants to read this one? Your last chance to read scripture in this room with us.
While they were talking about this, Jesus himself stood among them and said to them, "Peace be with you." They were startled and terrified and thought they were seeing a ghost. He said to them, "Why are you frightened? And why do doubts arise in your hearts? Look at my hands and my feet. See that it is I myself. Touch me and see. For a ghost does not have flesh and bones as you see that I have." And when he had said this, he showed them his hands and his feet. While in their joy they were disbelieving and still wondering, he said to them, "Have you anything here to eat?" They gave him a piece of broiled fish, and he took it and ate in their presence.
The reason I love this story so much is while in their joy they were disbelieving.
Yeah.
Still wondering. That pretty much sums up the Christian life and what faith can look like. So I'm going to play a song by Justin Roberts. Remember, he's the other children's musician we heard on the first. This is a resurrection song. It's called "Is It You?"
Is it you? Call us from our homes.
What I love about that song is they're right there with him. And they're looking at his hands and their feet, and they don't know if it's him. They think it is. Then they say, "Oh, of course it's you. Here's your favorite fish, the broiled fish." And then they ask again, "But is it you?" It's this constant, while in their joy, they were still disbelieving. So I thought we could maybe talk for a few minutes, maybe just as a large group, about this question: how do you experience the presence of the risen Christ in tangible ways?
Just a quick quote, Jurgen Moltmann in his book, Guided Creation, says that God is not where heaven is, heaven's where God is. And I see heaven right now, and I don't wait for heaven. And it's good to realize that's mythology, and God and is with us. And I see, when the slides went by, I saw Jesus and those two brave women standing right in the front lines, calling it
the protesters.
Yeah, theologians of the cross, calling it thing what it is. And that Jesus was right there with them. Yeah, heaven was right there.
I kind of go along with that notion. I mean, we are called at various times of life to go with the ghosts, stay with fear, or be transformed all through our life. And then there's the final one. But all through our life, we are called to make that choice. And some people do it. I happen to be Jewish. I don't use Christ to go there. But there are different ways that people do have that faith to say, you know, I'm going to take that difficult step and go through that ending and into that new place.
Any other thoughts about this?
Well, I'm not quite sure, but the question, have you anything here to eat? I'm not quite sure, but I think that's all asked the question.
Have you anything here to eat is the last question. I can't immediately think of any questions that follow.
Yeah.
There's a lot of dialogue.
So it's a nice lead into the Eucharist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice lead in.
Because it becomes Acts, and that's the early church. Yeah. Yeah, I think, was it yesterday that Jason reminded us that listening to the questions is really important? I have a couple more quotes I wanted to share with you. Brian Garish is a sort of Reformation theologian who has this essay called To the Unknown God. It's in a book called The Old Protestantism and the New. And I'm sure this book is out of print. It's an academic book. You have to go to a library to find it. But this essay is just spectacular. And this is my favorite part of it. He says, "We do not simply turn from the hidden God and then forget all about him. The forbidding figure waits on the edge of faith, and for this reason determines in some measure the content of faith, which has the character of a turning from the hidden God." Sounds a lot like Luther, right? "The luminous object of faith is set against a dark, threatening background. Awareness of the hidden God, therefore, qualifies faith in Christ. Faith returns constantly from the God on the perimeter of human experience to the incarnate God whom it makes its center." The incarnate God who it makes its center. Maybe that's the bread and the wine. Or maybe that's the water, the rain, the puddle you go through when you think of your baptism. Or maybe it's the conversation you have, the sound waves of the words going through the air when you're comforting a friend. And I think you mentioned sort of a couple times now, you've mentioned the end times, eschatology. And I wanted to play you another song. It's called All in All. This is Butterfly Fish. And it, I'll just play it.
About how people look up at the stars looking for points of light, but he turns your image down toward the plain, like toward the great plains, and there are little points of light. He refers to these cities as little points of light, which are filled with people creating light. So the Garish made me think of that. Instead of looking up, you could also look down, you know, little cities of people.
That's a great image. Does anyone know what, which hymn Jason is talking about?
I can go find it. The tune is Bozeman.
The tune is called Bozeman. Well, thank you all for entering into scripture with me for 5 rigorous days. There are teaching evaluation forms if you want to fill them out. And if you have attended faithfully, I'm sure you have all attended faithfully. I know that you have faith because I've seen it and I've heard it in your words. But if you have made an effort to be here and you want a free book from my office, come see me at the piano.
And thanks for listening.